Good morning. Today on Between the Beets, we're digging into resilience, beauty, and bold garden design with Texas garden writer Pam Pennick. Pam's newest book, Gardens of Texas, is a photo-rich tour of 27 inspiring landscapes across the Lone Star State, each one a living lesson in thriving through droughts, floods, heat waves, and freezes. With practical advice and a deep love for nature, Pam shows us how gardening isn't just about plants. It's about adaptation, storytelling, and connection to place. Good morning, Pam. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Ronnie. I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
I appreciate you coming on. Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Austin. That's where I live.
Okay. Not very far. Our like sister city here, so...
That's right. That's definitely right.
So what inspired you to create Gardens of Texas, which is a beautiful book, I must add?
Thank you. Thank you. I have to give real big credit to my photographer, Kenny Braun, who took the photos in the book and did an amazing job. But what inspired me to write the book were really a feeling of frustration about the lack of representation that Texas gardens were getting in the garden books and garden magazines that I like to read. For many years, I'd noticed this. Many beautiful gardens, around the country would be featured, but there would never be a single Texas garden. And I knew that Texans were making amazing gardens and landscapes. I was seeing it all the time. And so I decided to hit the road and see what gardeners were doing across the state, and then to put that in a book for everybody to enjoy, and also just kind of see how gardeners are adapting to the weather extremes that we're all facing these days. I really wanted to dig into that with the gardeners that I interviewed and just give us some inspiration for what they're doing creatively to adapt to that.
Well, that's a great idea, and there are a lot of extremes in the state. Now, you profiled 27 gardens across the state, and how did you pick those? What was your criteria?
It was, first off, I was, of course, looking for beautiful gardens in five different, very broad, Texas is huge, obviously, so mm-hmm. I was looking in five broad regions of the state. I wanted to get representation across the state, and so I was looking for beautiful gardens, but also, I mean, there are many beautiful gardens, so I had to narrow it down. I wanted to talk with the garden makers, the gardeners or the designers, to understand what the story of the garden was, and stories that resonated with me would be just if they had a deeply personal connection to that garden, or they were doing something especially creative or different. And I just wanted a good mix across the state of different styles of gardens, of different people doing different things. I mean, there are a million reasons to garden, just like there's a million different kinds of people. And I wanted to get a good representation of that across the state.
Well, I thought it was a great representation. And you even have like some farm stuff down in South Texas, which was, I thought was really cool. And you never see that kind of stuff, in a gardening book.
But it is gardening, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they're growing. Yeah. And almost all of the ornamental gardens still often have an area of growing food. So there's not just one way to garden. And a lot of people are doing different aspects of gardening, whether it's ornamental or food gardening or anything else. It's fun to see how those overlap and how they are different.
Well, that is fun representation in your book. Now, and of course, Texas is massive, and so they face everything from extreme heat to freezing storms. What are some of the most effective climate resilience strategies you saw in the gardens, especially keeping in mind that the climate is kind of a little crazy sometimes?
Yeah, people are really figuring out ways to keep their gardens going when we have these extreme. And I think Texas gardeners are used to a lot of heat. That's not a surprise. The, mm-hmm. the heat waves may be getting longer, the droughts may be getting harsher, but we're kind of used to that. But I think what we're often not used to are these surprise deep freezes that parts of the state are now seeing. And we may see more of those in the future. So a lot of gardeners are having to adapt to maybe this line of shrubs that screened me from my neighbors no longer will survive the potential winters that we can get. So what can we do instead? And also, when it is going to be dry for so long, do I need to shift my plant palette? So what I see Texas gardeners doing that's so unique and creative is really kind of thinking about ways of shifting from maybe shrub-based landscapes to grassland-based landscapes, and that especially fits for your viewing area in far west Texas. A lot of Texas was originally grassland, and if we get into a more drought-stricken situation, it could be that grasses will show us the way. They can sequester carbon, they provide amazing habitat for wildlife, and they don't require as much water as trees and shrubs. So I saw a lot of gardeners maybe adapting parts of their landscapes and gardens to more grassland or prairie style gardens, which was really an interesting way to think about gardening. And of course, Texas gardeners have been at the forefront of using native plants that are, you know, that have adapted to our climate extremes for thousands of years, and they're still doing that, and they're collecting water in unique ways, whether storing it in cisterns or sculpting their gardens to hold on to water rather than having it just run off into the storm drains. So there's a lot of really cool activity going on in the gardening world, very creative in terms of creating gardens that will be sustainable in the future that we have.
Yeah, and there's a lot of gardeners out here, and there's, you know, always a native plant sale every year, and a lot of people do the rainwater harvesting because, you know, you kind of have to. You have to be like a cactus and grab what you can whenever you can.
Right. So. Absolutely. That's a good analogy, yeah.
So you write in the book that gardens can be a form of storytelling. Can you share an example from the book where a garden reflected someone's personal or cultural story?
Sure. One of the gardens in the South Texas area is Linda Peterson's, and I loved her story. I knew that I wanted to feature hers right from the start because she has such a great personal story with her garden. She grew up in the same general neighborhood as the house that she now lives in. The house wasn't there at the time, but what I loved about it, she talked about as a kid riding her bike to this stand of enormous live oaks, and she and her friend would like to hang out and talk under the live oaks, and it was kind of their special place. And then when she was grown up and married, she and her husband Carl were looking for a place to build a house, and they found that very lot for sale, and they wanted to purchase it, but it came with the lot next door, and they were a young couple. They weren't sure if they could swing it, but they did manage to, with the idea that they were going to build a house real quick on the first lot, the one that they didn't really want, and then they were going to sell that one and use that to finance their house on the other lot. Well, one thing came to another. They ended up raising their kids in the first house, and their kids loved those trees next door on the lot that was still undeveloped and grew up playing under those same trees. And today, she has her dream house around those trees. Her garden is built around these massive live oaks. They're the centerpiece of the garden, and they are beautiful. And her story about that connection with those trees and how she built her garden around those trees, she has this like sparkling silvery gravel garden under those trees. It just really shows the connection that some people are lucky enough to have with the land for, you know, for decades. Not all of us have that. I haven't been in my own garden that long, but I did love that story so much.
That's a great story. And we had a tree in the last house we lived in, and it was a big live oak like that. And I don't know how long it had been there, but I was like, man, I wish we could take that with us because it's just, you know, so big and beautiful. So that's a great story.
Yeah. And we can really connect with those trees. Or I mean, you know, a lot of people really love their plants and feel so connected with them that it can be hard to leave a garden when you have to move on. So I totally get that.
What's your garden like right now? And has this book changed anything about how you approach it?
Well, it kind of has, because I was seeing these gardeners, you know, especially the ones who were looking more toward grassy plants, and that has definitely influenced me. Now, I'm gardening under a bunch of live oaks, too, not as spectacular as Linda's, but I do have a lot of live oaks here in my central Texas garden. And so my garden is very shady. It has a lot of deer, so that has definitely impacted the way that I garden. Mm-hmm. My garden is mostly, you know, yuccas and grasses and perennials with scented leaves. You know, like Jerusalem sage and salvias, things that the deer will let me have because they don't find them tasty. So that has definitely impacted the way that I can garden. And I would love to do more water collection myself, seeing the ways that people are holding onto water and storing it on their property. I'm just jonesing for a giant cistern of my own. I would love to do that.
Oh, that's good. Now, do you think gardening has become more urgent or more therapeutic as the climate changes? I loved how your book kind of incorporated the climate change into it. You know, I feel like we don't see a lot of that, and we need to know it's there.
Yeah, I felt like the gardeners were all thinking about it. Now, you know, like we all, if you've been gardening any time at all, you can see with your own eyes how the climate is changing. You can see it in the impact on your plants. You know, warmer winters can be good sometimes when you want to grow plants that maybe aren't right, you know, from the same region that you've always gardened in. But the surprises can be there too. And so it does take some adaptation, and every single gardener was thinking about it, some more than others. And that was okay. Excuse me. That was okay. I wasn't looking to have everybody like be the most thoughtful person in the world about it, but every single person had an opinion and advice on how they were adapting. And I definitely wanted to include that because that's part of, like, my friends and I, we're chatting about gardening all the time, and that comes up so often. How can we, you know, screen this area once our shrubs that we relied on died in the last freeze? What can we do? And, you know, those kind of conversations are going on when you're gardening, and I wanted to include that and inspire people that you can still make beautiful gardens in Texas. It's challenging here. We all know that. It's always been challenging. It may be getting a little more challenging, but it shows really what can be done across the state.
It was great. And the different uses of, like, the wire, I don't know what you called it, but the wire kind of cage where it made a tallish gardening thing with soil in the middle and rocks that didn't come out of the cage. I can't remember what it's called, but different things like
gabion?
That. Yeah. Those were great.
Yeah, it is fun to see what people are doing, isn't it? You can get so many good ideas, you know, that you can adapt to your own garden. And of course, at the end of each garden that I showed, I pulled a design lesson or a how-to lesson from each garden that people can take home to their garden wherever they live. You know, I mean, maybe you can't grow the exact same plants as this gardener, but you can still take home a design idea from that garden. And I wanted to make sure that readers had that information as well.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Now, for someone new to gardening in a tough climate, what's a good first step they can take? Is there one to create a more resilient yard?
Absolutely. The first advice I have is really to rely on local sources for plants, for gardening information. Gardening is so dependent on your local conditions. And really, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, was because, like I said, I wasn't seeing Texas gardens represented as much as I thought they should be. And so when someone moves here from another state, or they're just getting started and they've never gardened before, find local nurseries who are selling plants that will do well in your area, and make sure that you talk to them about your garden and what it's like. Is your garden sunny or is it shady? You know, do you have deer or do you not have deer? Like, those kind of things will make you successful when you choose the right plants. And that's just really knowing, like, maybe don't just go to the big box store and pick up whatever's there, because they may be selling plants that they sell all over the country, and those may not do so well for us here. That is often the case. Or maybe they'll do great for the spring and then they'll croak in our summer. And then you'll blame yourself and you say, I've got a black thumb. You don't have a black thumb. You just have the wrong plants. And that's really all it is. And the other advice I tell new gardeners all the time is, there is no such thing as a black thumb. Like, everybody can grow plants and everybody can kill plants. And that is okay. That is part of the process. Don't take it personally if a plant dies. It just means that you're still figuring out where the plants need to be on your property. And that's just part of the process.
Ah, that's great advice. I'll take that, because when I lived in Dallas, I was like, oh, my plants are awesome. And I come out here and I'm like, oh, my plants are terrible. So,
and when you came out to Alpine?
Yes.
Yeah, it's totally different, right?
Yeah.
Between Dallas and Alpine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to relearn based on where you are. But luckily, you are in a great gardening area, as I was really excited to see when I went out to West Texas to shoot for the book. It was amazing, the gardening that y'all are doing out there.
Yeah, it's getting, we're learning a lot. So thanks for coming on, and tell us anything else you want us to know, and if you could tell our audience how to find you and your book.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate the opportunity to share it with you. And I just want people to remember that gardening, you know, this is a challenging time with the climate, and gardening just brings us all together, no matter where we are. It's something that we all can enjoy, and just putting a garden out there in the world gives you so much beauty and happiness and creates habitat, and that's fun to watch too. So I just encourage anybody who's thinking about gardening to just jump in with both feet and get going. And people can find me on my website. I'm at a blog called Digging, and it's pennick.net. That's my name, PENICK.net. And my book, Gardens of Texas, is available in stores everywhere.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and stop by the radio station next time you're in Alpine.
I would love to. Thank you, Ronnie.
Okay. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Pam Pennick, author of Gardens of Texas, a stunning and timely collection of outdoor spaces designed to weather the toughest of Texas climates. From native lawns to rainwater harvesting, Pam shows us that beauty and resilience can absolutely go hand in hand. Learn more at her blog. As she said, it's called Digging, or grab a copy of Gardens of Texas wherever books are sold. If you're working on your yard, doing any kind of DIY landscaping, maybe with rocks and, you know, things you make out of concrete, you're going to want to pick this up because it's a great inspiration. So thanks to Pam for joining us today on Between the Beats.